Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome back to Sufi Pilgrims Podcasts. Eid Mubarak. Ramadan is over for another year, and we're back in business. Inshallah, good business, not monkey business. Today, we're going to talk about positive psychology, the positive psychology movement, and its implications for spiritual practice. As people who know me know, I'm fairly critical generally about psychology and psychiatry, although I've studied it, and I think it's useful. And one of the things that makes me critical of psychology and psychiatry is its negative point of view. Often when I go to conferences of psychiatrists, and more recently a seminar actually in Costa Rica with psychologists and social workers, I see what a terrible, terrible state that they're in, and they're not even aware of it. As the Quran says, La Yasharun, they don't even feel it, but I can see it on their faces, and this always troubled me. And I think one of the reasons, if not the major reason, is that they're always focused on the negative. In psychiatry, we have the famous DSM-5, Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, full of all kinds of diagnoses and psychopathology and psychological symptoms. The psychoanalysts have their own form of psychoanalytic psychopathology and dynamics and defense mechanisms, and even the cognitive behavioral therapists, they have their own dysfunctional thoughts, irrational thoughts, etc., etc. So all of psychology is imbued with this negativity. Now, people became aware of this, and one of the founders of the contemporary positive psychology movement is a psychologist named Martin Seligman. And he was famous for developing a theory of depression called learned helplessness, but now he's focusing more on the helpfulness rather than the helplessness, on how we can improve people rather than just see why they're doing badly. So he's one of the key names in this movement, starting somewhere in the 1990s when he became the president of the American Psychological Association. And what Seligman says is that there's three kinds of positive ways of living. One is the pleasant life. This is a life based on positive emotions, positive experience, pleasure, comfort, etc. And in his research, this, as we might expect, this kind of approach doesn't last very long, and it's probably the least effective way to get to a positive life. The second kind of approach is called the good life, according to Seligman, and this is where one engages in life with other people, in social causes, artistic causes, spiritual causes. This is called the good life. There's some fancy Latin term that escapes me for now to summarize it, but anyway, the good life. And the third being the meaningful life. Now, as spiritual people, a lot of these questions are already answered for us. So this is really directed mostly to a secular audience, these concepts, but we can possibly gain something from it, if not just to confirm what we already know coming from another direction. So Seligman's big acronym — acronyms are these things we use all the time in texting, FYI, etc., LOL, a series of letters that each letter represents a word — and his acronym is PERMA. The P stands for positive affect, feeling good, peaceful, serene. The E stands for engagement in various forms of activity, social activity, philanthropic activity, etc., or relationship, on which he puts a lot of emphasis, and social relationships have been shown to be highly correlated with people's satisfaction and happiness. And this is one of the big problems, of course, in modern times, because many people find themselves alone and isolated, more perhaps than ever before. Now, there may be some people called to the life of a hermit or a monk, but most people need to socialize in order to be happy. M is meaning. Now, the secularists have more of a problem than religious people. We know, we have a good idea what the meaning of life is, but people who don't have belief systems, they have to find some other kind of meaning. And they find it in various causes, from environmentalism to helping the poor to curing the sick, etc., etc. And the A stands for accomplishments. Although that's a somewhat ambiguous idea, because people can be very accomplished and at the same time be very miserable. Another thing which Seligman emphasizes, which flies in the face of the kind of DSM-5 approach or psychopathology approach, is building on our strengths. And in fact, one of the concepts in this happiness positive movement is the importance of flow. And flow is identified as a situation which we use our strengths to accomplish certain kinds of tasks, whether they're athletic, artistic, etc. And so we have to know what our particular strengths, our particular virtues, our particular positive aspects are. And he identifies them in 6 different categories: wisdom and knowledge. We all agree to that. Courage. Now, I often talk about courage because I think most of us are deficient in being taught about courage. I never heard the word, I don't think, in all my elementary and secondary education, either at school or at home. I'm sure there were other cultures, like the original Islamic culture, like some of the indigenous cultures, maybe other places like some of the more revolutionary countries, but courage is a word we don't hear too often as something that we have to develop, and yet it's essential. So most people just follow the paths that are laid out for them, and it takes courage to break with the tendance, the trends around you, and do things differently. This takes courage. And if you have no idea what courage means, you might miss the boat. Number 3 is humanity, compassion. We all have some idea about that. Justice, also very popular, but it's a tricky one, because some people who get into the idea of developing justice are actually coming from anger and resentment, and the anger and resentment just boils over. We see that in a lot of the revolutionary movements, whether it be the Russian Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the anger ends up taking the place of the justice. Temperance, not a very popular idea in modern society, is also very important, implying humility, modesty, self-control. These are all things we should be working on, but we should also know where we're stronger and where we're weaker, so we have an idea of what tools we're working for. And the last thing is transcendence. Yes, we have a question from the audience.
Temperance, is it like steadfastness?
Steadfastness can be part of temperance. Temperance is more the aspect of self-control, of not doing something rather than overdoing something. So it has to do with pulling back on our nafs, on our ego, and controlling ourselves and being humble and being modest. Modesty is another thing sorely lacking in our society. And even when we talk about it, people think that we're religious fanatics if we tell people they should be more modest in their dress. Just had an interaction about that yesterday with a more secular, intellectual kind of person. They don't see the need for modesty, so no matter how people dress, especially in the summers in the Western countries, the way some women dress, They see no problem with it, but for me, this has been an irritant for a long time, well before I was Muslim. Okay. Now, one thing to be clear about in this whole idea of positive psychology is we are not recommending people to see the world through rose-tinted lenses. We are not recommending fake goody-goodiness. This won't go anywhere, and people can easily see through the hypocrisy and the artificiality of that. So this is not, as they say in French, rose bonbon or fleur bleue kind of philosophy where we have to see everything good. No, the positive we're talking about has to be real positive, not fake positive. Not to be connected with fake news. Okay, real positive. Okay. So this is that's a very brief summary of the work of Seligman and the people studying positive psychology. I think it's an interesting movement and a salutary one because the psychological field is so infested with negativity. Okay, but now we're talking specifically about us as spiritual seekers and also as Muslims. Most of these concepts have echoes in our religious tradition, in our understanding of the world, but we'll try to go over them one by one. I think there are four points that stand out that we need to develop as spiritual aspirants, as murids, if you want. Number one is the positive psychologists recommend, and they have studies to prove the efficacy of a practice of gratitude. So there are two practices that they recommend at various points in time. One is every evening writing down 3 to 5 things that you can be grateful for during the day. This is completely consistent with shukr in Islam, and it's very important to develop. As I say, often our brains are compasses that point south, i.e. we always notice the negative before we notice the positive. We're geared that way, we're programmed that way. So we have to work to bring our compass back to the north, i.e. to what is good. This practice of gratitude is helpful in that direction. There's another practice where you write out a grateful letter to someone who's helped you and then bring it to them. It's a little bit histrionic as far as I'm concerned. The first practice is enough. Just every night, and we can all do it on our own. We can even write it down. What were the 3 things that you were grateful for during the day? There's always good things happening. Notice them. Or as I said to my clients towards the end of my career, often give me the good news also. You know, I had to say that to my dentist this week as he was completing the work on a horrible root canal at some point. And often even the medical practitioner, they don't tell you when things are going right. Everything is going right. They don't tell you until something goes bad. Oh, it's going to take us extra time. Oh, we have a problem here. No, tell us also when things are going good in any situation. Okay. Give me the good news also. Practice number 2. We know about sadaqah in Islam, acts of charity, or in contemporary language, philanthropy. And we can do this in many different ways, giving our help to other people through time, money, energy, any of these things. And they're all associated now scientifically with happiness. So those who need scientific proof, both gratitude and philanthropy, have scientific evidence that they make you more happy. We shouldn't need that scientific evidence. Our religions and our sense of morality inwardly should teach us that. But nevertheless, number 3, this is one of my favorite and very important to work on, is seeing the positive in any situation. Okay, what is in English we have a few expressions, every language probably has them, seeing the silver lining in the clouds. Okay, and it's not always obvious. You kind of have to work on it, you know. We had a very tragic situation happen last week. One of my daughter's best friends lost her 34-year-old husband, father of her 2 young children, in a car accident. And, of course, this is a terrible tragedy, but my reflex these days to look for silver linings and everything was to say, well, at least the mother and the children weren't in the car. You know, our brain and our heart right away goes to, oh, this is terrible. How could this have happened? We won't go into the metaphysics or of why these events occur, but we can almost invariably see something positive, even in the most negative occurrences. In this case, the mother and the children were fine because they were at home. The father had driven out somewhere with a colleague and had a terrible car accident. The details are still not entirely clear. So the French like to say, le verre est moitié plein, the glass is half full, is another way of saying the same thing. Notice what you have, not what you're missing. You know, oh, the hot water is not really hot in my apartment, but you have running water. And the water is warm. And even if it's cold, I lived in places in Trinidad, they didn't have any hot water. You could still manage for a while. You have water. There are places in the world where people have to walk 3 and 4 kilometers to get water. So that's another example of seeing what's left, the half full glass. Now, another aspect to seeing the positive is dealing with a lot of the orneriness and obstinacy and outright perversion of man and women, of course. And being able to look at some of these behaviors and either give the person the benefit of the doubt. The Muslims say we should try to make excuses for someone. If we see someone behaving badly, for example, somewhere, we can look at what other possible explanations there might be. Trying to think of some examples. There were some beautiful examples on a documentary I saw of a woman who had pushed into line. This is the most horrible sin you can possibly do in Canada or United States. Pushing into line is worse than serial murder and rape, according to most Canadian values. I realized that when I came back from the Middle East. So someone might push into line and you're getting really aggravated and say, oh, what a this and a that. Possibly they're in an emergency situation, or possibly, you know, they have to get home because their kids at home crying and they just needed to get out to the grocery store and they didn't know how to do it in the accepted time. To look for more benevolent kinds of interpretations when you see someone behaving badly. Or in another case, someone seems to be angry all the time. If you know something about them, you say, well, you know, this person, they had a really bad childhood and their father was very abusive and, you know, they never really fully recovered from it. Okay, so look for excuses for other people and, you know, so that you don't get into, you know, judging them instantaneously as being, terrible people. So that's looking at the positive. I'm remembering the story of a very saintly kind of man who had been a servant for one of the sheikhs in Damascus, Sheikh Hashimi of the Shadali Tariqat. And someone asked him, Ahmed, you've spent 40 years with this sheikh. What did you learn? He said, I learned one thing. Only one thing? Only one thing. What did you learn? He said, we'll say it first in Arabic, Fikuli shay khayr, which translated into English means, in everything there is goodness. It's a pretty deep learning, actually, when you think about it. A lot of good can come from it. So in anything that looks bad, there is actually good. Why? Because it's from God. There's nothing here that happens without the permission of Allah. So there must be good in everything. Even the devil, he's serving some positive purpose, maybe to tempt us and to improve us, to give us a choice. There's many possibilities, but everything in this world has a positive purpose ultimately. Number 4, for our own practice, The Christians put a lot of emphasis on forgiveness. The Muslims, we ask forgiveness from Allah, perhaps less frequently, although we should, from human beings. Personally, I'm not big on grudges and resentment. I honestly don't have grudges and resentments that I can think about, really. But I know a lot of people do, and then they have to practice forgiveness. But I've learned, so I said, what can I do for myself? I said, instead of forgiving so that giving up resentments, I can give up regrets. And regrets are like, if someone does something bad, instead of feeling angry with them, you feel like, I wish they would have done it this way. I wish this other thing would have happened. I wish this person would have behaved in another way, or the events would have unfolded differently. There's a problem there. Actually, this is prohibited in our tradition, to think, if only, you know, these hypotheticals, if only I hadn't gone to the store on that day, I wouldn't have had that car crash and wouldn't now have my car being repaired in the garage for a week or two. If only. This is actually haram in Islam. Why? Because everything happens with the permission of Allah. So there's no reason to regret anything, actually. It all has a positive purpose, once again. So if people have other ideas of other positive practices that are consistent with our way or even with the secular way, by all means, you can feed it back on the podcast as a commentary. And let's start getting to work on practicing these things. I'll tell you right away, they go against most of your reflexes. Most of your DNA-engendered reflexes go in the opposite direction. Instead of gratitude, you get indifference, or you ignore what's been done for you. Instead of being charitable, you're self-centered. Instead of seeing the good, you see the bad. Instead of having no regrets, you feel everything that's going on is wrong. These are all the ways, in some ways, we're programmed evolutionary-wise for that kind of approach. Spiritually, it's the complete opposite that we have to do. May Allah help us in this way, and help us to become better people, and help us to become better to our neighbors and closer to Allah. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wa salamun ala al-mursalin wa hamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Al-Fatiha.